Once firm allies, now fragile partners. A visit by the United States top diplomat to Saudi Arabia is a lot more challenging than in the past. So what's putting strains on American influence in the Middle East? And can Antony Blinken mend its fraying ties? This is Inside Stories. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Imran Khan. Top-level diplomacy often involves tricky footwork, but it rarely comes much trickier than during Antony Blinken's visit to Saudi Arabia. In the few months since his last visit to the region, the geopolitical landscape has dramatically altered. Saudi's restoration of ties with Iran, brokered by China, took Washington by surprise. Riyadh has ignored US requests to boost oil production, and that would help keep prices lower and US voters happy after the rises caused by the war in Ukraine. Blinken will meet ministers from other Gulf states too. That's at a time of intensified aggression against the Palestinians under the new far-right government in Israel that he hopes to bring closer to Saudi Arabia. We'll be discussing Blinken's trip and what it hopes to achieve shortly with all our guests. But first, this report from Sarah Khairat.
A meeting in Riyadh seemingly based on shared commitments and common interests, but the reality is relations between the US and Saudi Arabia are strained. The first meeting only lasted an hour and 40 minutes, even though US Secretary of State Antony Blinken had a lot of ground to cover with the Saudi Crown Prince. Tehran has reopened its embassy in Riyadh 7 years after it was closed. The restoration of Saudi relations with Iran was brokered by China, a deal highlighting China's growing influence in the Middle East. Saudi Arabia's Mohammed bin Salman is making moves, and they're not in the United States' favour. Blinken's three-day trip to the Gulf Kingdom aims to counter Beijing's influence in the region and that of Moscow. US President Joe Biden has vowed to not walk away and leave a vacuum to be filled by China, Russia or Iran. US hopes of a global boost in oil supply have been sunk by Saudi cuts announced this week. Washington is desperate for lower fuel prices that have risen during the war in Ukraine and are a big issue with US voters.
Thank you so much.
Blinken hopes to get his host to establish diplomatic relations with Israel, despite its far-right government intensifying violence against Palestinians and running a rampant program of illegal settlement expansion in the occupied West Bank.
The United States has a real national security interest in promoting normalization between Israel and Saudi Arabia. We believe that we can, and indeed we must, play an integral role in advancing it. Now, we have no illusions that this can be done quickly or easily, but we remain committed to working toward that outcome.
Saudi-US relations have been hit by the kingdom's role in the Yemen war and the torture and murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. But as Saudi Arabia forges ahead with new alliances and moves away from non-traditional strategic partners, can the US hold on to the power and influence it had traditionally yielded in the Middle East? Sarah Khairat, Al Jazeera, Inside Story.
For more on this, I'm joined by our guests. In Riyadh is Abdulaziz Al Ghashian, Saudi affairs analyst and fellow at the Sectarianism Proxies and Desectarianism Project at Lancaster University. In Washington, D.C. is Hilary Mann Leverett, CEO of Strategia, a political risk consulting firm. She's also a former White House national security official and former U.S. diplomat. And in Tehran is Fawad Izadi, head of American Studies Department at the Faculty of World Studies at the University of Tehran. A warm welcome to you all. I'd like to begin in Washington, D.C. with Hilary Mann Leverett. Now, if the polls are to be believed, then Robert F. Kennedy is a potential threat to Joe Biden's presidential run again. He tweeted around the time of the Saudi-Iran deal that China has now replaced the US over the past decade. America has bombed and China has built. Hillary, do you think that China is a threat to US diplomatic supremacy?
Certainly a threat to U.S. dominance in the region. That's been clear now for many, many years and certainly has accelerated under the Biden administration, and the administration is concerned about that. They're acting on that. Remember, they came into office with President Biden himself declaring that he was going to treat Saudi Arabia as the pariah that they are. He was going to refuse to deal with Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and only deign himself to deal with Saudi Arabia's king. It has been a frankly humiliating reversal in U.S. policy. Really recognizing that they need the Saudis, not necessarily only to achieve goals, but to prevent the Saudis from undermining the Biden administration's foreign policy agenda, as well as its domestic politics going into the 2024 election here.
Abdulaziz Al-Ghashian in Riyadh, there is still a relationship between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. It hasn't fallen apart completely yet, but it is very, very tense, perhaps more tense than it's been for a while.
Yeah, well, firstly, good day to you, to your viewers, and to all your guests. I agree there's a lot of tension. There still needs to be a lot of water under the bridge. But I think we need to contextualize this tension. Firstly, I very much echo what Ms. Hillary said in Washington, D.C. I think the fiery rhetoric that Biden himself and the Biden administration used in their elections has really amplified these tensions. However, notwithstanding these tensions and notwithstanding this rhetorical kind of jostling taking place, I still believe that there is still a strong relationship between the United States and Saudi Arabia. I think the symbolism has decreased, but I still think the strategy has been there. And I don't see it going anywhere soon. I think in regards to China, and this aspect of, you know, is it replacing Saudi Arabia or, I'm sorry, is it replacing the United States? I think for the Saudi lens, Saudi right now is viewing the world in a much more multipolar fashion. I won't say it's a symmetric multipolar perception. I think it's an asymmetric multipolar perception. I think it's viewing Saudi Arabia is viewing the United States not as a necessity as it used to be before, but I think as a strong desire and a strong preference. So I think this is now this transition of the change within the relationship is causing inevitable tensions. And just one last point, because I don't want to take the entire time, but one last point is that a lot of people have amplified and exaggerated perhaps the tensions between Saudi Arabia now is that this has been the highest level of tension since 1973 Arab-Israeli war. I would disagree with that. I think the tensions are significant, but unfortunately within the United States relationship with Saudi Arabia and Saudi's relationship with the United States, it's embedded with disagreement and turbulence. It has always had disagreements, but somehow there are strategic mechanisms that enable them to overcome these challenges.
Fahd Izadi in Tehran.
May I ask one thing? May I just point out one thing? I'm sorry, I don't want to take the time from my colleague in Iran. But just in terms of the state of U.S.-Saudi relations and where they were, I really need to point out, I worked at the White House. I was on the National Security Council in the Bush administration after 9/11. And U.S.-Saudi relations after 9/11 were not as bad as they are today. I worked then with President Bush to organize a trip by the then Saudi king to President Bush's ranch in Crawford, Texas. The relations were not nearly as bad on a personal level and a country-to-country level. We are in a very serious state today, even compared to the prior time of a serious crisis in U.S.-Saudi relations after 9/11.
Well, let me bring in Tehran here and Fahd Izadi. I mean, Fahd, the view from Tehran seems to be that the U.S. is simply an untrustworthy partner, that perhaps China is much more simpler to deal with. This is echoed in the breaking of the JCPOA, which actually, the Iran nuclear deal, which Iran actually stuck to their guns with and did everything that they needed to do. So this comes as no surprise to Tehran, surely?
No, it doesn't. I think everybody in Iran welcomed the normalization of relations between Iran and Saudi Arabia. I think the Saudis realized that fighting Iran is not good for their country. What the United States wants from Saudi Arabia is to demonize Iran, to confront Iran, to spend petrol dollars against Iran. That's not good for Saudi Arabia. They want the Saudis to normalize relations with Israel. which is not good for the Saudis in the Arab world and the Muslim world. They want the Saudis to reduce the price of oil. Why should you do that? It's not reasonable. That's, you know, when you sell oil at a higher price, you get richer, and you don't need to. You need to look at the market, not the demands from some politician in Washington that's running for presidency or whatever. And they want to make sure that the Saudis are confronting China and Russia, and that is also not good for the Saudis. So when you look at the demands that Mr. Blinken has from Saudi Arabia, you realize that the patience in Saudi Arabia is running out, and it's good for Iran and it's good for the region.
Abdulaziz Al-Rashid, I want to bring you in here. It's always been said that this was a China-brokered deal between Saudi Arabia and Iran. But clearly, that's not quite the truth. I mean, both sides had something to gain from this. What does Saudi Arabia gain from normalizing relations with Iran? What was the driving force there?
Well, firstly, I think, just like what my colleague in Iran said, I think both Saudi Arabia and Iran realized that confrontation has not been fruitful. And there was just no clear end game to this confrontation and this relationship of antagonism. And I think they needed to move forward. And thankfully, I think they made this, there was enough will to overcome these challenges, but still they need to iron out some of the tricky issues that they have. But I think what's driving Saudi Arabia mostly, and really what's driving Saudi Arabia foreign policy in general, is the fact that Saudi Arabia has enormous and very lofty economic projects that it wants to achieve. And I think it understands very well that it cannot achieve these economic goals, as Vision 2030, as we always hear about, without a stable region. So I think what is taking place and what's worth noting is that there's an aspect of regionalization that has been taking place. There's a regional agency that has taken place, that this is what the Saudi-Iranian normalization has illustrated, is that this is a region now that's attempting to take responsibility for solving its own issues. Now, it won't be easy, but at least they're going to discuss their problems and their cooperation within a framework of dialogue. And more importantly, I think what's going to make this rapprochement different than other rapprochements is the economic factor due to this economic regionalization. So that's a core bedrock, a foundation or a pillar of current Saudi foreign policy now, both regional and international.
Hilary Mann Leverett, it is actually somewhat extraordinary that you have the top diplomat of the US coming to Saudi Arabia almost on the back foot. He is coming to try and make relations not get any worse. Not to try and improve them, but to not make them get any worse. But there is some history to this. I mean, the Saudis have often had a better relationship with the Republicans than they have with the Democrats. Does that play into this?
I think it does. First, I want to echo my colleagues' comments in Saudi Arabia. I completely agree in terms of what the Saudis are looking for in terms of stability in the region and how important that is to their economic future. And unfortunately, how much that collides with how American administrations perceive their role in the Middle East and what they want from the Middle East. And here, the difference between Republicans and Democrats is very important. Historically, the Saudi royal family has had excellent relations with the Republican Party. I worked in the first Bush 41 White House back in 1990, 1991, and the Saudi ambassador was in the Oval Office every single day. That relationship was incredibly close. And again, even after 9/11, the relationship between the Saudi royal family and the Bush administration, this is the second Bush administration, was also very close. Fast forward to just a couple of years ago, the Saudi relationship with the Trump administration was also very close, notwithstanding the fact that President Trump refused to come to Saudi Arabia's defense when their oil facilities were attacked in 2019. So the relationship there is very close, and we see the Saudi involvement in the U.S. golf sport just this week. Here in the United States. And that is what I think is the driving force for Secretary of State Blinken coming to Saudi Arabia, is to try to get the Saudis to do no harm to the Biden administration's foreign policy agenda, but much more importantly, to try to get them to not be as involved in U.S. politics, because the Biden administration is concerned that particularly in swing states like Florida, Saudi money, Saudi involvement could actually push things, not tremendously, but just enough to give either candidate Trump or candidate DeSantis, the Florida governor, an edge in the 2024 election.
Fuad, is there an opportunity for Tehran here? There is, like Hillary said, Abdulaziz said, you know, there is a retooling, a wariness of now the relationship between Saudi Arabia and the U.S. Does that give Tehran an opportunity to perhaps try and get back to the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, or any other way for a deal between Iran and the U.S.?
You know, Iran has been trying to have the United States come back. Iran never left the agreement. Iran is in the agreement. It's the U.S. that needs to come back to the agreement. The Biden administration could return to the agreement on the first day of the Biden presidency. You know, Trump left the agreement issuing an executive order. And the next president in the American system can nullify the previous president's executive orders. And Biden did that when it came to the Paris Climate Accords and other agreements that Trump left. But the Biden administration decided not to do the same for the nuclear agreement. They could just return to the agreement and give Iran 2 or 3 months to come back to the full compliance that Iran was engaging in before Trump left. They decided not to do that. It's been more than 2 years since the Biden administration came into office, and they come up with different excuses every day. You know, the last thing they're saying is that because of demonstrations in Iran, they don't want to go back to the agreement. They say it's not on their agenda. This is what John Kirby, the spokesman at the National Security Council, said last week. But it's been more than 6 months since we haven't had any demonstrations. Whether we are going to have the agreement or not, it's a decision that needs to be made in Washington. I think the Raisi administration in Tehran has been trying to make sure that the facilities and the conditions are right for the U.S. to return. It's a decision that they have to make.
Hillary, was this a strategic blunder on behalf of the Biden administration that it didn't go back to the JCPOA? The opportunity was right there. It could have been a very simple decision. They didn't do it. And that's something that now perhaps the Arab world has looked at, the Gulf states have particularly looked at and gone, maybe America isn't as powerful as we thought it was. Maybe we do need other allies. Was this a strategic blunder?
Absolutely. I think it was the most important strategic blunder that the Biden administration has committed. And it sunk their foreign policy agenda from the beginning, because not only is the United States now looked at in the region as not willing to militarily come to defend any of our allies, but we can't even keep an agreement that was working, that was in everybody's interests. It was a very serious blow for the Biden administration not to return, like they did to the Paris Environmental Accords, to that agreement. Very much a strategic blunder, and I don't think they can. I'm not sure they can recover, and I think the Saudis are betting on that it will take everything that the Biden administration has to restore credibility in the Middle East, while fighting with Russia over Ukraine, while fighting with China over Taiwan. It's just not something this administration can do as it heads into a presidential campaign with Republicans here putting themselves into the race for president. It's just too much for this administration, and I think the Saudis have.
Abdulaziz, do you think it was a strategic blunder?
I'm not going to go into American politics here. I'm going to stick to my Riyadh politics with the theme of meddling, et cetera. So I'm not going to meddle in my Iranian colleagues and American colleagues' terrains. But what I would say is that I think the when it comes to the Saudi perception of the JCPOA, there was a lot of things that they had issues with. And I think with the Saudi, with the JCPOA, it was mostly viewed as an Obama legacy. It was a fact of trying to reproach Iran with something that I think came at the cost of the relations with the Americans' main partners in Saudi Arabia and others. But I think it's precisely this issue of going back into the JCPOA, leaving the JCPOA, is precisely the reason, or one of the core reasons, why there was a Saudi-Iranian rapprochement and there was a preference to have the umbrella of China. Because I think the region has had enough of waiting of what's going to happen and being susceptible to the politics in other Western capitals. So I think this is the reason why. This is why there was a regional agency. The fact that, listen, we're not going to allow ourselves to be a platform or an experiment for others and to express their own or project their own politics upon us. This is a theme that was very much agreed upon entirely or unanimously in the last Arab summit in Saudi Arabia. They all agreed upon that they are not going to be a region where other superpowers can compete. They have their own agency and their own will. Now, I think when it comes to other issues of dealing with this, with the reluctancy and the aspect of credibility, as my colleague in the United States said, I don't think it began with the Trump administration or the Biden administration. I think the aspect of American credibility, unfortunately, has been in the making for a few decades now. And I think the war in Iraq really didn't help in 2003. The other aspects that have led to misperceptions. Now, I think one of the reasons why there is a constant misperception or a constant disappointment and expectations is because the language that we use is very much misleading. One of the terms that we use is alliances. Now, Saudi Arabia and the U.S. are not military allies. They are partners. Israel and the United States are not military allies. And therefore, this notion of alliances being taken back and forth and used too lightly, in my opinion. And I think that's one of the reasons why there's a lot of misexpectations.
It's an interesting point you make about Israel, because $3.5 billion in military aid alone from the U.S. suggests that they are much more than just partners, as you say. There is an alliance there. Hillary Mann, I actually want to ask you about Israel. In legal terms, I'll give you that.
Okay, there you go.
I'll give you that in legal terms. Hillary, I want to ask you, when it comes to Israel, the Americans have bitten off a lot more than they can chew. The Abraham Accords, which Israel sees as one of its biggest successes, they haven't managed to get Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is being pressured by the Americans to join those accords. They're simply not doing it. When it comes to Syria, the Americans had problems. When it comes to the region, the Americans are simply too involved in too many different things. There wasn't a clear strategy. That hasn't helped, has it?
No, it hasn't. But I think the role of Israel is very, very important. You have not only a Saudi government that's closer historically and I think to today with the Republicans, but you also have in Israel with Prime Minister Netanyahu, he is incredibly close with the Republicans. His chief advisor, Ron Dermer, was a registered Republican activist, a party activist here in the United States before he moved to Israel. The Netanyahu government and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman have deep ties personally to active candidates in the U.S. campaign. The idea that the Saudis are going to make peace with Israel under the Biden administration is almost farcical. And I think the Biden administration sees, again, not that they're going to get this amazing victory with the Saudis to make peace with Israel, but they're trying to prevent the Saudis from working with Israel to undermine the Biden administration in particular, not even the United States, but the Biden administration. I think at this point for the White House here, it's really all about politics and personal politics for President Biden.
Fahd Izadi, do you think that the Americans simply have a scattergun approach when it comes to Middle East diplomacy, and this is now coming back to haunt them, that there are simply too many competing agendas?
United States is a country in decline, and the fact that the Saudis and Iranians are signing agreements in Beijing is a sign of that, is an indication for that. And this decline will continue. I think what the United States doing with regard to Russia is going to hurt the U.S. in the long run. I think their confrontation with China is going to hurt them in the long run. I think the United States used to be a superpower. They need to understand how can they engage in soft landing to become a more normal country. And unfortunately, this is not what we see in Washington. What we see in Washington is the continuation of policies
Fawad,
that
made... Fawad, I am going to have to stop you there. You've made a very interesting point. I've got about a minute 30 left on the show, and I want to put that point to our other guests. Just very quickly, in Riyadh, Abdulaziz, very quickly, is the U.S. in decline?
I think it's perceived as so. I don't think the U.S. is perceived to be in decline. I think there are just other options. And I think that's what Saudi Arabia is viewing the world as. In my opinion, Saudi Arabia views the world in an asymmetric multipolar world. In other words, that the United States is still its main preference.
Sorry, I did say quickly, and I do want to come to Hillary Mann-Lever as well, and we are running out of time. I do apologize. Hillary, U.S. in decline?
I think without a doubt, and like my colleague said, in Saudi Arabia, it's been decades in the making. The Iraq war was the big push for the United States off the cliff in the Middle East, and we are seeing, unfortunately, the ramifications of that to this day.
I want to thank all our guests, Abdulaziz Alghashian. I want to thank Hillary Mann-Leverett, and I want to thank Fawad Izzadi as well. And I want to thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Imran Khan, and the whole team here, bye for now.